This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Ever wonder about the stories of the women around you?
We wanted to create an intentional space for women to share the wisdom they have gained through life experiences.
Tune in to be in awe of some of the wonder women in our midst. Wondering Women on ORFM Dunedin.
Kia ora and welcome to our next episode of Wondering Women. I have a very exciting guest with us today. Her name is Kirsten Kosh, and I actually met her in an op shop on George Street at the St. Vincent de Paul op shop. So it's quite fun to have Kirsten here with us and to hear a bit more about her story. But do you want to just give us a little introduction first, Kirsten, about who you are and whatever you want to tell us?
Sure. Hello, Amy.
Hi. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I was actually going to go down to the St. Vincent de Paul before I came in here, but I ran out of time, so I'll be going afterwards.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite places to shop.
Yeah, I shop at the op shop too, and I have all my life because my parents were on benefits when I grew up, and we kind of liked the quality of the secondhand clothes, and that's kind of what we could afford. So it was either hand-me-downs or op shop clothes.
Mm. Awesome. Such a great service some of the different organisations have, having those op shops, isn't it?
They do, and they run a series of other workshops, services too, which is why St. Vincent de Paul is interesting, because you've got people coming in for food parcels and different things as well. So I'm interested in how the different churches provide those different services.
Yeah.
But I'm very interested in the clothes.
Okay. Yeah. So do you op shop a lot for different clothes?
I do. I op shop for materials for my own art practice. Mm-hmm. I do this botanical dyeing.
Cool.
But also it was, especially during COVID, it was a time to kind of socialise slightly safely and just see what people were up to, because I do a lot of people watching, not trying to be nosy, but I'm just interested in what people's experiences are, the way they look, the way they get treated, their search for clothes for themselves and for other people, for things for their house. So I find it extremely fascinating watching people,
yeah,
and especially doing that shopping, talk about what they need and their aesthetics, what they like.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've noticed that too, like when you go around to different shops, you mix with different demographics, which I think is really healthy, and also you just get to chatting to people, don't you? People you wouldn't necessarily normally chat to on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that's right, you do. Because I don't know whether you have those kind of conversations at other clothes shops, because I'm not at them, but I don't think you do as much.
I think you're right, unless you're asking for help looking for something from the shop assistant. But there's so many things we could talk about, but like the sustainability of op shopping, but I particularly wanted to hear a little bit about your dyeing, your botanical dyeing projects, because that's how we got chatting. Like I think you must have initiated the conversation, which was really lovely, and I noticed your clothes, which were really beautiful, and you're wearing some today, and they have really beautiful markings and patterns on them, and then you told me that you had done that, and so can you just tell us a little bit about the process or what you do?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm doing this process called botanical dyeing, and I'm doing direct dyeing, really. So I'm putting plant matter materials right onto my fabric, and then I'm rolling it up and steaming it, or actually putting it in this kind of dye water. But it's called direct method because I'm actually using the materials directly on the fabric rather than trying to boil them up and get a colour extracted and then putting a fabric in.
Wow.
I'm doing it this other way where I'm kind of printing on the fabric with the materials.
Yeah. And it's really effective. Like I'm just looking at Kirsten now and she's got sort of a blue flower and sort of a tan leaves.
That's right.
I wish you could see it, listeners, because it's so stunning. And so do you need, like, chemicals or anything to do the process?
I try to avoid the chemicals. And this jersey is cashmere, but it's machine washable cashmere. So cashmere is fantastic at taking on the dye things, but it's quite a soft fabric. So because you're applying quite a bit of heat and then you have to bind it all really tightly, you can actually warp the fabric, but it takes on the animal fibres take on the dye amazingly well and without extra chemicals. So I kind of use a vinegar water solution, and that creates all of the colours you see. That's what I use for this. So I'm trying to cut out the chemicals.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But for other colours and for other fabrics like linen and plant materials, I need to use iron or copper.
Okay.
And so I'm trying to make my own iron water and my own potions and stuff rather than buying expensive chemicals. And apparently it's the dry powdered chemicals that are often more poisonous for you.
Okay.
So a lot of dyers buy all this fancy stuff and expensive stuff in dried form and then they go away and do these exact projects with it. But I'm more of the, I want to do things safely, but I'm more kind of experimental, just trying to figure out potions and things that I can make that I can do kind of big pieces in. And
yeah. It's fascinating, like the knowledge you must have of both the materials of the clothing you buy at the op shops and of the plants, and how to extract the colors. Like, is this something you've just researched on your own, or have you done degrees in this sort of stuff?
My mother was a natural dyer, and we lived on a native tree farm in Portobello called Manuka Farm.
Cool.
And they had a native tree nursery, and my mother was far into spinning and knitting and doing natural dyes, but kind of making these immersive dyes where you put all onion skins in and then put your thing in and get bright yellow out of that. So I learnt from my mother, and my father's very creative too, so I learnt all this making on the farm. And then I've spent the rest of my life basically at university mucking around with art subjects and social sciences and fine arts.
So it's a real generational learning that you've been, it's been passed on or living on the farm and enhanced with some study you've done later on.
Yeah, yep. Okay. And now I'm trying to go back to more of the early part of my life, which is more of the hands-on gardening and teaching people more sustainability and really getting into my creativity and trying to make it financially work for me, but be sustainable and be creative.
That's awesome. So just one more question about the dyeing, like the plants you choose, do you take them out of your garden? Do you pick them up on walks, or how do you do you,
all of
are
the
you
above.
Always on the lookout for special colours?
I'm always on the lookout for materials that are hard to source.
Okay.
But also seasons. Each season does something different. Like at the moment, the bulbs are up, and you can get really good, interesting effects with, I think it's bluebells, are they called? I thought they were grape hyacinths for a while, but little blue
dotty, I know what you mean.
Things. Mm. And you, from daffodils, you can get a nice yellow bulb colour. Apparently you can cut up open a lot of bulbs and use the bulb as well for dyeing. And I think it's iris root is a traditional form of fixative for fixing dyes to fabric.
Wow. It's just so fascinating, isn't it? And such sort of, I was going to say local knowledge or indigenous knowledge sort of. Do you know if there was a Maori tradition of doing these sort of things?
Yes, there is. I think most cultures have got a dye history, but with the Māori part that I've looked into, you've got the Māori medicinal plants, so you've got a whole lot of knowledge about how to use them medicinally, and that kind of goes into the food and dyeing, how you'd use it for your clothes and stuff too. And then you've got a whole lot of uses, or what plants could be used for. They could be used for string or perfume, or whether you soak them, how to extract the colour from them and when to collect it. Is it because I've tried kōwhai flowers and I'm like, I can't get the colour out of them, but do I need to dry them? And if the dried ones didn't work, should I try using the pods? How could I get the colour from the seed?
Okay.
So
it's a real trial and error sort of process as well.
Yeah. Yep. I get it. I like things that produce good results, like silver dollar gum, really bright, really effective. Onion skin, really bright, really effective. And they're both plants you don't need any fixative to make them stay.
Mm.
So they're great, but there's other plants that are a bit trickier. But I've kind of read somewhere that Māori would use the dye from the Koromiko for, it produced a great red, a really dark red. But again, I've got some from the dried seed heads, but I think I could probably extract things from dried leaves too, but the green leaves didn't give me enough colour. So so I have to experiment, but I like to get some good results amongst that for things that I know will work.
Of course. Yeah. And does it last? Like, is it do the dyes like last like just normal washing powder, and or do you,
it's
do
not,
you care for them carefully?
They don't like washing powder really because it's too acidic.
Yeah.
So even with most natural dyed things, or say silk or cashmere, any fabrics, they'll tell you to use a wool wash or a delicate wash and probably not to put it through your machine. So I kind of put big pieces through a delicate cycle, and I try to reduce the heat, but you're meant to reduce agitation too.
Okay.
But that's what I'm trying to do, is to make them solidly fix. And some things I've had absolutely no problems, like I wash this quite a few times, I can wash it in warm water, but I do hand wash that. But other things I'll put through my machine, say I do these prints with hollyhock flowers, bright purple flowers.
Oh, cool.
But I could put them in a black and blue wash, and if they're going to, I'll hand wash them at first, but if they lose any dye down the track in a black or blue wash, it's not going to matter if they lose a wee bit of purple. Because the blue will probably drop a bit of blue, your jeans will.
And it just makes me think, I don't know if this is true or not, but sort of sustainable practices beget sustainable practices. So maybe if you have clothing that you don't want to wash, and sort of chemical powders, you just might wash them more organically or less. I think we probably wash our clothes far more than we need to anyway.
Just
my son, it's just easier to chuck them in the wash basket than actually look at it to see if it's dirty, you know.
I had that, especially as a teenager. Mum would take my clothes out of the washing machine and put them all back on my bed and say there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah.
But I still absolutely love washing, and it's complete waste. It's just a slight washing thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, teenagers are... We do wash our clothes too much, and a lot of hand-dyed things are actually scarves or a special throw for the bed, or something that's not getting a really fancy jersey that's not getting washed all the time.
Yeah.
But I wear woolen merinos all the time, and I do wash them in the machine, and they're fine.
Yeah.
The ones that I've dyed, they're fine.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it. So you're saying you do, like, bed throws, and do you do other things besides clothing you wear?
Yeah, I've done quite a few blanket panels. In fact, blankets are really great.
Yeah.
But some of them, I don't know whether they're an art panel, whether it's going to turn into a coat.
Okay.
Blankets are really useful. So I like having them on the bed, on the in the lounge, on the sofa.
Yeah.
Making cushions.
Yeah.
So I quite like all that home furnishing stuff as well.
Yeah. That's so cool. I'm going to take a photo of Kirsten today, if you'll let me, and I'll post it on, we've got a Facebook page for Wondering Women, and I just you need to see some of the results of her beautiful work, people. So I'm gonna have a look on our Wondering Women Facebook page later on, and so you can see the stunning work. It just amazes me. Nature is so beautiful, and it's lovely to use it to decorate our own, what we wear.
My parents were very into native trees, so they taught me quite a lot about the Māori names of trees and some of the uses as well, but that's sort of something that I'm still really interested in. So at the moment I've just signed up for the New Zealand Herbal Federation diploma in herbs, whatever, so I'm learning more about plants and their uses.
Okay. The specifically New Zealand herbs and plants, or
they cover all herbs, but they do definitely discuss New Zealand natives and trees included, like kahikatea, various different trees they've included as medicinal plants.
Yeah, wow. And do you have Maori blood in your family, or is this just something your parents were interested in?
No, I don't, but it's something I'm interested in. I have done a postgraduate diploma in Indigenous development, so it's something I think we need a lot more work done in New Zealand and around the world.
Yeah.
And if you look at Indigenous rights within other kind of social rights at the moment, it's definitely one that needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
But there's a lot it can teach us too about sustainable ways and creatively engaging with the world around us and other people.
I agree so much, and I think it's such a blessing or a gift your parents gave you that they were into it and sort of passed that on to you. I think that's a really lovely thing to have in your life. I think a lot of people don't have that. A farmer once told me he was walking with his niece, and she, you know, he grew up on his farm, but the next generation, his niece, was very, very urban in her experience of growing up. And she said to him, "Whatever you do, uncle, do not buy your eggs from the farm because they're very dirty. Buy them from the supermarket." And he got such a shock, like, and was so sad about it, you know, like how quickly we can lose that. I mean, that's very general farming versus urban experience, but we can lose that knowledge of the land, of the whenua, so quickly that I think it's a great gift that your parents gave you and that you're carrying it on.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think it's, they knew, all native peoples, I think, whatever continent, they knew how to live with the land and respected the land, didn't they?
Yeah, well, lots of traditional and Indigenous groups, societies, would be more in touch with the land around them.
Mm.
And we're very in touch with the urban landscape,
like
you said, and we need to be. We need to know how that operates. Mm. But there's a lot of pleasure that can be had by interacting more with nature or all of those things. What do people actually want to do with their lives? Because we get hooked into the system of things that we have to do and need to do, responsibilities and everything. So there can sometimes there's no other ways for people. So I'm really interested in ways that people can be creative and kind of interactive, but also kind of find themselves or develop themselves in other ways, I guess.
And you're right, like we do need to learn how to live in the urban landscape. And I grew up very urban, but I think you can also live in an urban environment and still live sustainably and know the land and, you know, little garden in your backyard or anything like that. And I think in Dunedin, probably everywhere actually, you can find it. You can connect to the land not very far from where you're living, like a walk down the road to Ross Creek or the Botanical Gardens or in Dunedin or, I think if we can connect where we are in our own place.
In our own backyards. Yeah. It is. It's been nice to see lots of those kind of local group forming, Northeast Valley Project, different things happening in South Dunedin.
Yeah.
And, just people getting together around various things they're doing locally.
Yeah, I read recently about a Green Island cooperative garden right by the Catholic Church there, St. Peter Chanel. I think they gave land.
That's right.
And there's a community garden there now where people can help grow the veggies and get their own veggies and just to teach our children, like the example I gave before of this little girl who thought, you know, eggs came from the supermarket or should come from, to just so they can see that you can grow spinach or silver beet in your backyard. It can just be something as simple as that, can't it?
That's it, and dirt on your vegetables or the thing I'm really keen on, like I like the idea of teaching people to do it, but the thing that I'm really keen on is teaching them how to harvest things properly or respectfully so that it's going to grow again, so that they know the name of the plant and they know its properties, whether it's poisonous, just how to use it and things. So it's like people want to know all the steps maybe so they can achieve a certain thing, but I'm more interested in getting them to have the experience.
Yeah.
Have the experience with the plants and knowing how to kind of prepare them, and then have the experience of just trying something with these fabric things, only thinking about a few things, not trying to overcomplicate it, and then growing from there. Because like you said, there are these wee steps we can make, and sometimes it becomes such a big thing you think, oh, I can't do that, it's impossible. And your aim is to create this perfect thing that's going to look just like that.
Yeah.
But actual fact, just if you just enjoyed seeing what you could do, then you can grow from that point.
Yeah, I love that philosophy. It's about having a relationship with the materials you're using and understanding them, and then learning in the process instead of just result driven, which we can get into so easily, can't we, in our Western way of thinking.
That's
great, Kirsten. Thanks for that. I love that philosophy. I will think a bit more about that. And so you were talking about you like to show people. Do you do classes? Do you teach this?
I've taken a few, but I've had some health issues, dental things, and some kind of pains in my neck and wrists.
Yeah.
Bit of the old rheumatism. So, and I don't have a car and things like that, so it makes all those things of organising it a little bit tricky.
Yeah.
But now that COVID's over, I'll contemplate it again.
Yeah.
But I've also thought it'd be great to do some kind of video thing or make a book that... Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like a YouTube could be so easily accessible now or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And when I met you at St. Vincent de Paul, I think I noticed what you were buying too.
Oh,
and
okay.
All the similarities in the items that you were looking at.
Okay.
I think there was purple and there was some kind of strong pattern. I think, I don't know whether it was a diamond or something. There was something happening with all your clothes, zigzags, that's it, and stripes.
Yeah.
And it was something you said you liked, and I could see these kind of commonalities between the items you're looking at. And
oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, actually, it just came back to me now. There was a rug, just a small area rug that was, it's sort of woven or... And it was purple striped, sort of, and that's in my kitchen now. And and I remember you observing, and I watched you, sort of help other shoppers, like, or suggest things, or just really gently. Like, it was a really lovely way you had of just making a suggestion or asking a question and engaging the people and. Yeah, I remember your it was quite a gentle way, but of engaging with others. It was lovely.
Oh, thank you. Well, I actually came at this botanical dyeing too from the research I was doing was for sociology, and I was doing a master's on local clothing upcycling and how it comments on the fast fashion problem, the problem of fast fashion.
Yeah.
So all of those things of the fact that we wash our clothes too much, the fact that we buy branded clothing, or just the fact that it's the buy, consume, and get rid of because the quality isn't good enough, or the society's feeding the insecurity that we need to have a new thing. Or so I was looking into these local artists and craftspeople who kind of were making art clothes and stuff for all different reasons, and what their comments were about the fast fashion industry and fashion in general. And
that's awesome. And I can see it all tied in, like you were shopping for yourself but watching others. And we could do a whole show on op shopping, and we're sort of coming to the end of our time here, but like everything besides my shoes, everything I'm wearing today is from op shops. And one of the things I love about up shopping is A, it's sustainable, it's cheaper. I do love a bargain. But you can buy things like they're higher quality, aren't they? It's amazing what people get rid of. But I couldn't afford to buy some of the things new because they're just so ridiculously marked up if they're a brand. But you can and find things that you would never even necessarily look at. I mean, I don't go into department stores very often because I get overwhelmed. But I love going into an op shop and just flicking through. And sometimes I almost always find something. But
Same.
That's amazing. I need a bigger house. But anyway, it's been so lovely talking to you, and I could think about five other shows to do with you. I just think you have such a great, diverse interest, and they all tie together. But so thanks for sharing some of your experience and your wisdom with us today. And before we leave, I have one more question for you, which we end every show with, because it's about the show Wondering Women is about hearing women's stories, but also hearing some of their wisdom that they have to offer. And so our final question is, what is a practice that you do, Kirsten, that sustains you or revitalizes you or brings you energy?
That'd be gardening.
Yeah.
And like, I'm so excited that it's spring now. It was my birthday last week.
Oh, and happy birthday.
Thank you. I got a load of compost, and that's my birthday present every year.
Oh, cool.
And now I'm just putting in my little things and watering the veggie garden, and just really excited about seeing all the spring growth and being able to be outside again.
Yeah.
So I think gardening and going for a walk in nature, all those things, the kind of sensory experience of it is very restful for me.
Yeah, oh, lovely.
And rejuvenating.
Yeah. Forest, is it called forest bathing? That's one of the, you can feel it, can't you? Almost feel the oxygen or the, oh, that's lovely. I can just feel the energy from working in the garden or going for a walk. And it obviously comes out in your work and your beautiful textiles or botanical dyeing. So thanks for being with us today. Really enjoyed chatting to you, Kirsten. And that's it from us for now. Ka kite anō, and have a great day, everyone.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.